Welcome to the podcast of Central Church. This is our latest weekly message.
Yeah, thanks everyone for coming. Good morning. We have a few new faces, and also just really lovely to see you guys. We are missing Luke and Caro very much, but I hope they're having a nice time in New Zealand, walking 25 kilometers in one day, which does not sound like a holiday to some of us, but I think they're having fun. I do want to begin. So the title of this message is Post-Traumatic Resurrection, Bearing Witness to Love on the Other Side of Death. And I do want to begin by acknowledging that we're meeting on unceded Darawa country. I want to honor the resilience of the Wadi Wadi people as they have experienced the death and destruction brought by colonization and ongoing colonization, and really honor their resilience. And I want to pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. And so we're going to begin with a quote that we've looked at a few times already this month. On Easter morning on Mount Kira, if you're with us for the sunrise walk, and again last week at the contemplative service, Jay Perini says, the whole point of the resurrection stories and the whole point of the resurrection itself is that we don't recognize Jesus when he comes back to us. We can contemplate this in a few different ways, and I think, yeah, it's quite a deep statement. But this morning, what I want to offer us is that the trauma of the crucifixion changed Jesus. And it also changes our understanding of God. I think this is really important for us as a church. We want to be a place where people who are on the fringes of faith communities, people who have experienced trauma in their lives, trauma in church, can land. And so I think part of being a trauma-informed church is about how we treat people in our midst. It's not about just getting people to come to our church, but it's like how are they treated when they're here? But it's also about how we talk about God, how we do theology. It's really important that we are looking through a trauma-informed lens. When I say trauma, the word trauma, it comes from the Greek word, which is for wound. And so for a long time, it was used to describe physical wounds to bodies, injuries. And since the 1880s, it has been used to refer to psychological wounds. But really, the diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, which is when trauma has accumulated in somebody's body to the point of them not being able to really function in a healthy way, that actually wasn't a diagnosis until 1980. So I was born in 82, but trauma has existed long before that, right? The experience of being traumatized, the experience of having PTSD, has existed probably since humans have existed. 1 in 10 Australians actually will be diagnosed with PTSD in their life. And this is my context. This is the context that I share from as somebody who has a PTSD diagnosis. So, but I want, as we are looking at the wounds of Jesus, I want you to also find yourself there in that story. There are plenty of people who have experienced trauma or pain or rejection or abandonment or loss or disappointment in a way that it's not diagnosable as capital T trauma or diagnosable as PTSD, but it still affects us. We still carry this in our bodies. We carry this on our own individually, and we carry this as groups of people as well. So I want to share a bit of my story with you. I'm not going to go into great detail, but anytime we're listening to someone else share, the best thing we can do is take care of our own body, take care of ourselves. So I really want you to have permission. I'm going to share a story that's really sad. But I also want you to take care of yourself as you're listening and give you permission to check out if you need to. And you always have permission to do that in this church as well, to do whatever you need to do to feel grounded, to feel safe. When I was in 2005, I was 23 years old, which I am getting much older now. But I was actually in West Africa. I was volunteering in mother and child health care. And after about 3 months in Nigeria, I was involved in a really terrible van accident. And 8 of my friends and coworkers were killed in that accident, which is, it's, you know, one of those really horrendous stories you hear. From my experience, my memory is everything was fine. It was a sunny Sunday morning. Everyone was happy in the van. You know, we had prayed for safe travels before we left. We were singing, and then all of a sudden, I remember brakes slamming, and I was knocked unconscious for a couple of hours. And when I woke up, the world had changed completely for me, and it would never be the same. And I know, even if it hasn't been a car accident for you, I think most of us in this room have had something that has, you know, changed our world in a really significant way. My friends that were killed were just some of the most alive people I'd ever known. They were full of dreams and ambition, and it's still, you know, almost 20 years now on, is such a horrendous loss. In events that cause trauma in our bodies, we often feel powerless and out of control. We can't run away, and we can't fight back. And often in those situations is when we end up feeling traumatized. It's often when we freeze or we fawn, which can mean people-pleasing or placating or playing along, whatever we need to do to survive. And I want to just say, if you haven't heard this before, that any way you have survived was the right way. Our bodies don't give us options of how we respond in trauma. And so however you survived was your body trying to keep you safe. So I was injured in that accident significantly, not critically injured, but I was significantly injured. But I had survived. I was alive. Everyone in my life was so relieved, so grateful. But for me, the world had changed in a way that left me feeling really terrified. How could I ever feel safe again? How would I live past 25 years old? I could not imagine living to be even 25. The future felt completely chaotic for me. And my experience of survival included advanced medical care, surgery, therapies, a community that cared about me and loved me, food, water, electricity. I had everything I needed to feel safe again. And so I can't think about that without thinking about people who are in situations of conflict where they do not have that safety coming after the injury or after the loss, such as Palestinians in Gaza, people in Burma, people in Congo, Sudan, people living, experiencing structural racism, people in domestic violence situations where they are trapped and it continues, the trauma continues. So I was left with some physical wounds that healed, but I was left with pretty significant spiritual or theological wounds. And everyone, including me, wanted to brush over those. The things I heard from people, very loving, caring people, God must have such an amazing plan for your life. We know God does not give us more than we can handle. The safest place you can be is the center of God's will. And so then that makes you think, okay, well, where was I when I had that terrible accident? How did I miss the plot, miss the safety? It can be really confusing, the things. And I think when we're wounded, we are even more susceptible to the language that people use with us. There's a New Testament scholar named Shelley Rambo. She's based in Boston in the U.S., and I really, really love her work. I'm going to quote her a few times. But she says, I think I have it, yes, many familiar versions of the redemptive narrative skim the surface of the abyss. The gloss of redemption is perhaps the greatest enemy to those who survive trauma. It provides a promise often unaccompanied by forms of life that can deliver on that promise. Life for many does not triumph over death. Instead, life persists in the midst of death and death in the midst of life. I did not have a spirituality that could make space for the abyss that I was facing. Death lingered in my experience of resurrection, in my experience of new life. So I repented of my fear. I over-spiritualized my anxiety and my depression. I gave all of my energy to projects that kept me really busy and left very little time for self-reflection. I put on a really brave face. I looked very resilient. I kept going. And it was 5 years later that I finally experienced birth trauma, which then gave me no option but to listen to my body, to examine my wounds more closely, and begin the journey towards healing, which still took another 6 years after that birth, but eventually I got there. And I will just say, having the diagnosis of PTSD and finding a way forward in terms of healing from trauma was one of the best gifts I've ever received. So we're gonna look at John chapter 20. So we have, right before this story that we're gonna read on here, we have Mary Magdalene, who goes to the tomb. She's expecting to find Jesus' dead body. She finds the body isn't there, and then she meets Jesus in the garden. She doesn't recognize him. She thinks he's a gardener. So she goes and tells the disciples he's alive. And they are still so terrified that they lock themselves in a room together. Do they believe her? Trauma can make it very difficult to trust people and to even trust yourself. They have just seen their friend, their teacher, the one who loved them so well, their hope for the future. They've just seen him executed like a terrorist. They are terrified. John 20, on that evening, on the first day of the week, when the disciples were together, with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them. So he just like walked through this locked door somehow. He just appeared. And he said, "Peace be with you." After he said this, he showed them his hands and his side. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. So I love that Shelley Rambo, and she has a couple books on this. One's called Spirit and Trauma. One is called Resurrecting Wounds, I believe. She talks a lot about the resurrected body of Jesus. And she does a deep dive on these last few chapters in the book of John. And when Jesus showed his followers his hands and his side, he is showing them his woundedness. How difficult is that for us, even with our own wounds? How much pressure do we feel to be healed, to be whole, to be mentally stable, to have it together, to be able to give and love and serve? Generally, my PTSD is pretty well managed. You can ask my husband. I'm like watching him sit there. We'll see what he says. Actually, you should ask him. Anyway, it's well managed compared to how I was. But I can have these flare-ups of really traumatic anxiety. And when I do, I feel so ashamed of myself. How long is this going to be a thing for me, I wonder? The last thing I want to do when I'm really... It's easy for me to talk right now, but when I'm really in the midst of my woundedness, it's very difficult for me to share with anybody and to show those wounds. And yet there is something very powerful in having other people bear witness to our survival. Some of us have been shamed because of the wounds that we carry. Some of our wounds have happened in church, and we've been told to keep them hidden, keep them secret. We've been told, or maybe even worse, we've been told that they aren't wounds, that they aren't painful. And I'm really sorry if you've experienced silencing on top of your woundedness. Realizing that Jesus, in the fullness of his resurrection glory, was visibly wounded, was very significant in my ability to accept my own wounds and my woundedness. My past was not in my past, at least not all the time. And that's the nature of trauma. Our past rushes into our present in a really disruptive way. With trauma, it produces fear, it produces anxiety, panic attacks, anger, rage, despondency, inability to do things or go places that other people find really simple. But with Jesus, we see him bringing his past with him into the present. So we also have permission to do that. And then there's Thomas, who missed the first appearance. And we have John 20, verse 24. Now Thomas, also known as Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and I put my finger where the nails were, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked again, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." And Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." There's a famous painting by Caravaggio, which was painted in 1602, 1603. Maybe you've seen it before. We'll just take a moment to look. Jesus is inviting Thomas to put his finger in his wounds. In the painting, Thomas plunges his finger into the side of Jesus. And if you look at Jesus' face, you might wonder if it's painful for him. Other people can be so clumsy with our wounds. Stop doubting and believe. This is not about verbal declarations or cognitive assent. Stop doubting, Thomas, and trust me. Stop doubting and cling to me. Now that you have felt my wounds, will you trust me? I wonder what wounds in Thomas's life growing up under military occupation, having witnessed his friend murdered by the government. I wonder what wounds in Thomas's life were touched by the wounds of Jesus in that moment. Nicholas Wolterstorff has a really beautiful little book called Lament for a Son. He lost his son was 25 and he died suddenly. And Nicholas has written a beautiful book about processing that grief. And he reflects on the resurrection of Jesus, and he says this: "Put your hand into my wounds," said the risen Jesus to Thomas, "and you will know who I am." The wounds of Christ are his identity. They tell us who he is. He did not lose them. They went down into the grave with him, and they came up with him, visible, tangible, palpable. Rising did not remove them. He who broke the bonds of death kept his wounds. Jesus is a trauma survivor. I'm not saying that he had PTSD or, you know, the way I experienced that was as mental illness. I'm not saying that about Jesus. But Jesus knew the powerlessness, the violence, the rejection, the fear that elicits a trauma response in most bodies. But Jesus also knew that his friends would be traumatized by his death. Those that loved him, his mom, his siblings, his followers, his close friends. He knew the terror they would have felt. He knew the questions about the lack of God's intervention that he himself asked, my God, why have you forsaken me? In John chapter 15, he shares a final meal and a farewell speech. And it's kind of like someone who maybe is, you know, has a terminal illness. They know they're going to die soon. And they want to share the most meaningful thing they can with those that they love. And this is just a bit of it. It's obviously a very long, multiple chapters. But Jesus says, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. And we often hear remain in me. Sometimes we hear it translated as abide in me, which I think is kind of the worst option, because when I think of abiding, I think of like going down the lazy river at Jamboree in an inner tube, you know, and you feel like Jesus is like, yeah, just abide in me. Just chill out. Just abide. Just trust. But actually, this word remain is the word in Greek, which is maybe pronounced menine. I have no idea. Do you want to go to the next slide? Yeah. So this, to remain or abide, this is a distinctive presence in the absence of Jesus, in the experience of Jesus' death. Shelley Rambo says, they are being asked to do more than maintain belief in Jesus. They are instead placed on the other side of his death and asked to witness love there. Remain in me. Remain in my love. And she goes on in her book to talk about how maybe an even better translation is survive in me. Survive in my love. Witness my love on the other side of death, on the other side of loss, on the other side of disappointment. Jürgen Moltmann was a young German soldier who was captured at the end of World War II. So I think he hadn't been too long, but he was a part of the Germans who did the Holocaust. He was put in prison for 3 years. And while he was there, he met Christians who actually were really kind to him. And he was given a Bible, and he read about Jesus, and he started to contemplate God in light of the horrors of the Holocaust, which his people had inflicted on Jewish people. He ended up writing a book called The Crucified God. His response to the incredible suffering of the Holocaust was not to believe that God was responsible, and also not to believe that God was somehow removed from that suffering. But he saw God as one who takes suffering into God's being. The crucified God is now the remaining God, figured in the Spirit. And it's really interesting, this is also from Shelley Rambo's work, that when Jesus is handed over to Pilate to be crucified, the word in Greek is paradidonai, and that handing over to Pilate, that's the same word when Jesus is on the cross and he says it's finished and he hands over his he breathes his last breath. He gave up his spirit. That's actually the same word. Gave up his spirit is paradidonai. He handed over his spirit. So in that place of the death of God, the Spirit of God remained. The Spirit of God was handed over to those who followed him and were present. Shelley Rambo writes, "But the spirit, the weary trickle of love, the fragile breath, finds form in the breath and movement of witnesses. The haunting is also the transmission of the imperative to love, the call for something to be done. The work of tracking and sensing is sanctifying work, the work of making love visible at the point where it is most invisible." And I wonder how you have witnessed the fragile breath of God's Spirit on the other side of loss, on the other side of death and disappointment in your own life. Survive in me, survive in my love. Divine love cannot be extinguished. And we are invited to make love visible in the world. Jesus invites us to survive in his love. And I find that very comforting, that surviving is enough. Surviving is enough. Jesus is at home with in his wounded body, and therefore we are welcome to come home to our wounded bodies. We're going to finish by looking at a beautiful artwork by an Indian artist named Jyoti Sahi. We'll just take a few moments to look at this. We did look at this in contemplative service, some of us did. What do you see? Maybe just with the person next to you, we'll just take a moment and share something that you see in that painting. When I look at this, I see the Jesus body looks both like it's being crucified and like it's been raised from the dead. It's pain and grief and suffering, as well as somehow it's victorious. I also saw, I'm sure some of you saw, maybe people, men, women, being, you know, coming in near. And when last week when I was looking at this, Linda was leading. She asked us to, you know, share a word that comes to mind. And for me, it was the word held, that the pain of the world is held in the crucified body of Jesus, that the pain of the world is held in the risen body of Jesus. So what does it mean? I have a few questions for us. These are questions that we will have to live out for the rest of our life. They don't necessarily have really clear answers. But what does it mean for you to bring your wounds with you into resurrection life? What tenderness will that require? What vulnerability with others? What honesty and courage? And what about not only our wounds, but what about the wounds that we know we have inflicted on other people? Is there space in the crucified body of Jesus for those wounds? Whether that's personally, or our people have inflicted on other people, or our nation has inflicted on other nations. And what does it mean for us to be seeking to be a trauma-informed church that can create safety for the woundedness of others? Can we allow our bodies, our stories, our memories to be held in the wounded, resurrected body of Jesus? This is a body we can trust. Let us remain in that love together. Let us survive in that love, where even death, though present, does not have the final word. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you want to check out more about Central, visit us at centralchurch.org.au. Music by Chris D'Souza, a beloved member of Central.